I want to thank everybody for attending our first Yahoo Finance Plus sponsored webinar for 2022. It's called Diving into DeFi's Investors Brace for a Volatile 2022. I wrote that a week ago and wasn't expecting as much volatility as we've gotten here, but fortunately, we have Jim Bianco of Bianco Research LLC about to join us in a minute here. First, I want to tell you what to expect from this. We're going to do a deep dive on DeFi as expected, as promised. We're also going to get into some inflation talk, the Fed, bond market, China, global head risks or headwinds here. So we're going to do it all. What we're not going to do, talk about individual coins, especially those joke coins, maybe a little Dogecoin talk, but not from Jim. We already promised him that. But we're going to have a lot of fun with this. And a couple of housekeeping notes before we begin. If you look at the bottom of your Zoom screen here, you can see there's a chat function. You can send us questions in that. You're going to want to send it to the host and panelists. That would be me. Also, we're going to be taking polls, and we're actually going to kick off a second. If you hit the polls button, or we're actually going to launch this right now. And the first poll is, what is your exposure to DeFi? It should be live right now. We want to get kind of a handle here on the group. And so you should be able to vote. And we're opening that up right now. And the votes are coming in. We'll reveal that in a moment. And I want to bring in now Jim Bianco. And Jim, what a day it has been. I'm going to share my screen. I want to start with the news of the day. We'll get into DeFi in a second. News of the day is CPI. Watch this right here. So this is a chart of the Consumer Price Index, the headline number. This goes all the way back to the 1940s. And some big spikes stand out. Here's the one in 1980. That went to 14.5%. That was painful, but you can see that we have been climbing here. We are at 7.1% right now. And I want to throw in another indicator. This is M2 money supply. This is how much money is working itself into the system in the form of credits and loans, thanks to the fiscal and monetary policies, the extraordinary ones that we've seen here. Now, Jim, I'm going to ask you to interpret this because we've seen some big spikes in M2 money supply before, but nothing like this. And even though we've come down to historically high levels still. So I'm wondering, how do you make sense of all this inflation data that we're seeing right now?
Thanks for having me, Jared. Yeah, it's been an unusual period. Let me start with M2. What you're seeing in the spike in the data is an echo of all of the stimulus that we pumped into the economy when we locked down in 2020. The stimulus checks, the PPP loan programs, everything else, the enormous amount of government spending that we've had over the last 2 years, we've been at near records in terms of percentage of GDP. So that's how we've created all of this money. It's good to talk about cryptos and throw out the M2 chart because that M2 inflation rate is so big. The overall inflation rate, CPI, 7% is what was reported today, is the highest number since 1982. So 39 years or so is we haven't seen a data like this. And there's a raging debate going on about why it is that high. But I do want to mention, nobody saw this coming. I mean, I could tell you a year ago, I was worried about inflation. And I thought maybe we'd get  3.5, and that would shock everybody. But we got double that. We got 7 or so. Now, on one hand, you've got still what's called the transitory crowd. They still exist. They still think this is an echo of the reopening of the economy. And they blame it all on the supply chain crunch. And that's probably true that the supply chain crunch is there. But that's not the only thing I think is going on with inflation. The other part is stimulus. Fiscal stimulus, monetary stimulus, all that M2 money we pumped into the system, too much money chasing too few goods, bidding up prices as well too. Added up, we've got the highest level of inflation in 42 years and an expectation that that's going to severely change Fed policy towards the hawkish side as they try to deal with this.
And we'll circle around to the Fed policy. I do want to move on to decentralized finance because it all kind of ties together. We saw a lot of people buying Bitcoin as an inflation hedge. I don't know how that effectively fits into DeFi directly, but everything's kind of coming together here. And I got to tell you, Jim, a year ago, I hadn't even heard of DeFi. As I understand, this is a term that just kind of came into being in 2018, but it describes the complex that we've been seeing here. And just give us an overview of what you see as important in this DeFi movement.
So decentralized finance is what DeFi is short for. And what it basically means is, excuse my cough here, I'll try not to do it. What it basically means is that we being the DeFi space, is creating a bunch of what they refer to as protocols. And those protocols are computer-driven programs called smart contracts that will execute on trading, lending, borrowing, insurance, lotteries, and the like. So we've taken your local bank and we've created it, we've turned it into a computer program that runs automatically. So when you enter into the DeFi space, you buy some cryptocurrencies like Ethereum, you put them on an electronic wallet like a MetaMask wallet or a Dharma wallet, and then you connect to one of the protocols in the DeFi space, like a lending or like a trading DEX, or that's short for decentralized exchange like Uniswap, you can trade your coins. You could exchange your Ethereum for anything else. They've got tens of thousands of pairs out there that you can trade it to. And it's all done by computer code. There's no human beings. They don't ask you your name. They don't ask you any kind of know your customer rules. And so it's executed cleanly and succinctly. This is the hope of decentralized finance. And that's what we've been seeing. You're right. Decentralized finance started in 2018, but it really took off in the summer of 2020, otherwise known as DeFi summer. And in last year, in 2021, it really started to explode as well too. Let me go to one of my first charts here, and that is the total locked value. Now, total locked value in DeFi, you're not just buying the coins of something and holding them, you're staking them, or you're lending them, or you're borrowing against them, or you're engaged in a financial transaction. Beginning of 2021, this is a logarithmic scale chart, there was a total of about $17, $18 billion locked value in all of the liquidity pools in lending and borrowing and staking and everything. Currently, that's a year ago and 2 weeks ago, 54 weeks ago. Currently, that's $17 or $18 billion has now mushroomed into $233 billion. As well. And the orange line on the chart is just the same thing expressed in Ethereum. And you can see that lately, because the Ethereum price has been falling, because we want to know what it is in dollars, there's actually been more money going into DeFi, but it gets revalued in dollars that because of the sell-off, that it looks like there's no money going in, but there actually is. So this space is up about 20x or so in the last year in change. It has really been growing parabolically.
And Jim, I want to talk about some of the promises here that are being made, what DeFi is supposed to do and what it's actually doing right now, because decentralized finance, it's supposed to take out the middleman. It's returning the power to the people. We know that in our everyday transactions, whether you have a Robinhood account or even a Coinbase account, we do have the street as some middlemen. They participate in all these companies in some way. And, you know, I think, Jim, that I don't know if we're ever going to get to the point of true decentralization, but you go back to the Bitcoin white paper of 2008, Satoshi Nakamoto, and there were promises of anonymity and lots of other ideas that just kind of fell away in the end because of practicality. If you want to spend your money in the real world, well, until lately, you've really had to do that mainly by converting into fiat dollars. At the end of the day, we have to pay taxes in US dollars and fiat dollars. And I don't see that going away. So what is the true level of decentralization that this promises to bring to the market?
Well, you're right. That is the big debate in this space right now. There's a phrase that we use in the space called a maximalist. And you've probably heard it associated with Bitcoin maximalists, which quickly means Bitcoin is all you need. It's perfect, or as close to perfect as you can get. Everything else is substandard to Bitcoin. Just invest in Bitcoin and go no further. There's Ethereum maximalists that believe the same thing. about Ethereum too. Ultimately, I do think that maximalism is a very bad idea. It is a very limiting idea as well too. But I do think in the exception is that the space, in order to have a long-term potential, is going to need some level of decentralized maximalism. You're right that throughout 2021, what we found with Ethereum, to stick with that for a second, is that it became so popular, especially when NFTs, non-fungible tokens, really started to take off in popularity, that the network got overwhelmed and that transaction costs known as gas fees took off through the roof. And so people then started searching around for alternatives. I can't go to an Ethereum protocol, a DeFi protocol on Ethereum, and spend $200 to buy $200 worth of tokens. So they looked at other what's called alternate layer one chains like Solana, Cardano, Polkadot, and there's a whole bunch more of them as well too. In addition to the layer two chains like Poly, like Matic and Arbitrum as well too. And what they found is they found very, very low gas fees or transaction costs, in some cases less than a penny. And they've exploded in value. But how did they achieve that? They achieved that by getting higher throughput, transactions per second. And how did they get the higher throughput? They're centralized. So what's been happening is people have said, look, the key here in the DeFi world is we have to be decentralized. Decentralized means it is an autonomous program that no one controls. No one could come in and stop it or start it or alter it without it being done in a very, very public way. No regulator could come in and tap somebody on the shoulder and say, we don't like this activity, make it go away. I don't control it. In a centralized world, they do. You can control it. And so while we understand the need for decentralization, and it's critical, the reality, you're right, has been everybody has been running in 2021 towards the centralized layer ones or the centralized blockchains, if I was to use that phrase, as well too, and the centralized layer twos, which sit on top of the blockchains that do a lot of the processing because they're very, very cheap. And it's gotten us into a philosophical debate about if we don't get to decentralization, are we really going to invent anything new? We're just going to invent a digital version of the same thing that we have right now. And we're not going to have that promise that DeFi and decentralization bring. So I agree with you. That is, we're not quite there on decentralization. There's some hope in the Ethereum network that we're going to get there through the proof of stake, the merge into proof of stake, which should come in the first half of this year, and then maybe move on towards some other improvements to help increase throughput to lower transaction costs, like sharding is the word that they phrase with it. And if we get there, we can see both decentralization and this hope that we have a new system. Otherwise, we're just reinventing the same wheel.
Yeah, and I really want to get back to that in a minute. But first, I want to share the results of our poll. And as expected, most people here are new. I mean, I'm relatively new as well. What is your exposure to DeFi? 86% said relatively new, came here to learn. Medium, I own an NFT. 6% said that. Advanced, I care about gas fees. Just talking about that. 6%. And expert, I understand elliptical math. 3 of 173 of you, I am very impressed with. Way beyond me here.
Yeah, me too.
No, so one of our former producers kind of stuck it to me last year. Do you really understand Bitcoin if you don't understand the math behind it? And I realized I was going to lose a few weekends in the future. So I do want to get to a reader question right here. And this is a good one. And it kind of leads into the follow-up that I wanted to just ask you. Will the SEC upcoming regulations kill the DeFi industry? And I think there's a very nuanced answer to that. We were talking about this earlier today, just in kind of a pre-conversation to this webinar. And I mentioned that Coinbase, they tried to roll out a feature last year where they were going to pay interest. And this is one of the big things about DeFi, interest on your holdings in a Coinbase account. The SEC shot that down, and their securities counsel, I think, didn't handle the communications very well. But the net result is no. Gary Gensler at the SEC said no. And, you know, if we're in fact just mimicking the features of traditional asset classes, which is the ability to pay interest on holdings, Well, that requires SEC regulation. You have to file documents with the SEC, registration statement. You have underwriters. Who are the underwriters? Well, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, you know the names. We have custodians. They're going to bring in their friends. So it seems like Gary Gensler has already laid down the gauntlet and said, we're going to have intermediaries. Wall Street's going to take its pound of flesh here. Just wondering your thoughts.
This gets back to the previous conversation about decentralization and centralization. Coinbase and a lot of the other regulated exchanges are centralized. They have to go to the federal government and the financial regulators like the SEC and ask permission to do various things like offer interest on coins. And the regulators could just summarily say no, which is what they've done. You go to DeFi and you get out of that world and you go into the decentralized world, the regulators don't have a reach into that world. They cannot say yes or no. They don't even know who they're supposed to. If it's done properly in decentralization, there's not even a person to call to say you can't do that because it's just a computer program that runs automatically as well. They can put up an improvement proposal that needs to go to a vote. In other words, yes, you can make changes to these protocols, but you have to vote on it. Everybody has got a coin, votes on it. And when that improvement proposal passes, it gets implemented. So the SEC could put up an improvement proposal and say, we want to shut it down. Everybody will say no, and that's the end of it as well, too. Also, the premise of the question is everything is in the United States. The thing about this space you have to keep in mind is it is global in nature. And actually, a small percentage of those that play in this space are in the United States. Chain Analysis is a crypto research firm that publishes a report on crypto adoption by country. They look at the number of people that adopt it as a percentage of the population in GDP. Only one country in the top 20 is a developed country, and that is the United States at around 9 or 10 right now, last report that I've seen. Philippines, Vietnam, Nigeria, the Middle East, Africa. This is where this stuff is exploding. Central America as well, too. It's exploding in value down there. Gary Gensler is not going to go to a global system and say, you can't do this for the people of Africa and the Middle East. It's out of his reach as well, too. And because of that, what's also people need to understand is, the way I've said this, decentralized finance and the crypto space is going to come one way or the other. We're either going to have all of our regulators shut it down, and okay, then Nigeria, the Philippines can call up China and get some advice from them on how to create the next financial system, and we'll sit that out, and we'll probably lose badly on it. Or we could recognize this is going to happen one way or the other and get a seat at the table and start helping to create the new financial system. But if the SEC wants to continually say no to Americans to doing this stuff, and you've probably seen this with some of these protocols that you come to, the SEC has ruled that you can't do this as an American. And who are the other countries? North Korea, Pakistan, in the United States, Somalia and the South Sudan won't allow you to do this. I mean, literally, that's the list that we're on right now because our regulators try to hold us back from us. Now, they've added China a little bit to that to that list. India might get added to that list. But look, this is happening one way or the other. And there is no way that it's going to go, that a single country regulator, even if it is the United States, has the power to shut this down.
I would push back against that a little bit just by saying, yeah, Gary Gensler isn't going to go on the world stage, but the Internal Revenue Service has a global reach. The U.S. Treasury Department has a global reach. It was only 10 years ago that the IRS was able to upend centuries of Swiss secret banking. That ended 10 years ago. They delivered financial records of people who had evaded their taxes, U.S. citizens here. So, you think about the Western banking system and the countries that participated in it and those that don't, and you look historically what's happened over the last 30, 40 years, who was not in it before versus who is in now? Iraq went to war with them. Iran sanctions. Venezuela sanctions. North Korea sanctions. Libya invaded, not on the gold standard anymore. Western capital markets. China is leaving them, apparently, with the beginning of Didi. So there's a lot going on here, but I just wonder, you know, at the end of the day, when we're talking about the Internal Revenue Service, the Treasury Department, all this is backed by the U.S. military in theory. I'm just wondering how you react to that.
Yeah, you're right that if I was to be just give you a bold answer, U.S. regulators have abused their power and have forced other countries to acquiesce to what they want, namely Switzerland, because their customer base in the United States was too big to ignore it or too big to fight it as well, too. And this is one of the reasons why there's been a giant pushback in terms of this. I'll go you the one step further. Why is it that they want, what is it that they're afraid of? What is it that they're trying to shut down? Let me give you an example. I'll give you the example of El Salvador, which has adopted Bitcoin as one of its currencies. Now, before it did that, if you were a migrant worker in the United States from El Salvador and you earned some money and you wanted to send it back to your family, on average, it took about 2 weeks and about 15% of the money in order to go through this Byzantine inefficient system of sending money transfers. Restated, those poor people that wanted to send some money back to their family, maybe a few hundred dollars, they have to work 1 month a year just to pay the bank, just to pay to get the money back to their family. That's an outrage. That is an outrage that we have a system like that. And that all I see our regulators saying is, we need to shut this down. We need to get our pound of flesh. We need to protect the existing financial system, as opposed to saying, how do we get it so that those migrant workers can send money in 1 second for no cost anytime they want? And I can do the same, and you can do the same, and everybody else can do the same. No consideration of that. When El Salvador decided that they were going to go to the Bitcoin standard, they reached out to the World Bank and they said, why don't you come in and help us implement this? And the World Bank summarily said, Bitcoin is dirty. It's destroying the environment. Drug dealers use it. You're on your own. That's the mentality that we have. So yes, you're right. There's going to be some regulatory fighting that's going to have to go on. But what is it that they're trying to do? Are they trying to protect the existing financial system? Let's remember, the existing financial position, the winners in that system are largely in the United States, largely at the top of United States financial institutions. They've won. It's the system that treats them well. This is a threat to upend that system. So, and the regulators that regulate that like it the way it is. So are they trying to help people or are they trying to protect the status quo? You know, they always use the word investor protection when they talk about why they're doing stuff, but it really comes off more as incumbent protection. So I don't disagree with you that there's going to be some kind of a pushback from regulators. But at the end of the day is, why are they pushing back against it? And I would argue it's more about incumbent protection.
And there's a great segue into my next question here, which we're going to deal with in a second on stablecoins. But first, I want to get to our second poll, which is, and I'm launching it right now, my greatest concern about the investing landscape in 2022 this year is inflation, which includes monetary, fiscal policy, throw all of that in there. Geopolitical risk, China, Kazakhstan, Ukraine, North Korea, all of that in there. Political risk, we have U.S. midterm elections, haven't even mentioned that yet. Regulatory risk, we've been talking about the crypto crackdown, and then health risk, some kind of COVID variant, et cetera. So we're going to release the results of that and leave it open for a few minutes here. I want to get to
got all of the above on that survey.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I want to get to another question. We're getting quite a few great questions and some great interaction here. So I want to encourage everybody to keep asking these questions. But here's one. Do you worry about DeFi hype or bubble? Are you worried that this is going to burst because bad players within the DeFi communities with frauds and manipulations will be exposed more because it is built on the decentralized concept, which may ultimately harm DeFi consumers. And I'll take this one first, and then I'll kick it over to you. I think in general, we're never going to get rid of fraud because we're humans, we're error prone. We can be gamed, and we can be socially, socially manipulated into giving away passwords, into buying fraudulent items. That's not going to go away. But I think the system brings a layer of trust. It encourages more trust than not. And I think it rejects more fraud, or it makes fraud less likely than before for a number of reasons. But I'll give you the floor now, Jim.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. That this the current system right now is a new system, nascent system that's being evolved. And there is a lot of, you know, errors and fraud and maybe outright theft. And that's why, you know, you've got to be careful in these early days of a system like this. Also, the system is evolving very rapidly. You know, we're already on to what is referred to as DeFi 2.0 in the system. Olympus DAO, Tokamax, Rory Capital, which is merging with Fei. These are all part of the leading edge of a DeFi 2.0 revolution that seems to be underway as well, too. So think about this in terms of, you know, the internet in the early 90s. Look, in right now, we look at this and we say, oh, it's a bunch of drug dealers. Well, I'm old enough to remember when we got started with the internet in the early 90s, we said, oh, that's just for porn. That's all we're ever going to use that thing for. It's never going to be any kind of commercially viable thing. As well too. And then over time, we start to realize that there is a commercial viability as well too. So yes, if you go into the DeFi space and you wander away from some of the more established protocols, you're going to find that, you know, there you are in the Wild West. There is subject to hack. There is subject to theft. There is subject to just programming mistakes that can wind up ruining you as well too. This is not, you know, for those that are not willing to understand what they're doing, but like the early 90s, a lot of visionaries looked at that imperfect system and said, I know where this is going and I can see where we're going to be 5 or 10 or 15 years down the road. And they became very successful for that. I think DeFi is the same way. If you're asking me today, what is the viability of DeFi as far as being able to pay my taxes or pay my rent or buy groceries with it and have it to be safe? We're not there yet. But, you know, it was famously in 1998, Paul Krugman, who wrote that the internet will be no more impactful on economies around the world than the fax machine is. You know, so it was that late in the game that people still thought that the internet was never going to be anything big. But I still think if you understand what we're trying to accomplish in the decentralized financial space, 5 or 10 years from now, there can be a real revolution in finance, and it can wind up being cheaper, faster, lower cost. If it doesn't produce that revolution, then the whole space will go away. But I do think it will produce that revolution.
I think it will too. And I'm glad you brought back the early to mid 90s as a kind of a reference point, because if you think back to then, it wasn't until about 2005 that the internet became somewhat socially acceptable. That's because of MySpace and Friendster. And if you were at Harvard, I guess you had Facebook at the time too, or the Facebook. Fast forward, it took another, let's say, 5 to 10 years to really build up the infrastructure to make the internet useful. By memory, it's 2015 that everything started working a lot more seamlessly. And then you fast forward to today, it's a similar timeline. So it's 2022, Bitcoin white paper, that was 14 years ago, but it's only within the last couple of years, well, let's say last year, that NFTs brought that social aspect to cryptocurrency and suddenly became cool. We, you know, we have these little tokens, we have NFTs, they're fun. We share them on Twitter. And then you think, okay, in another 5 to 10 years, we finally have the build out, the successful rollout of this technology, which is finally seamless and integrating with everything else here. All right, so I just want to pause there. I'm going to do a little dog and pony show with respect to Yahoo Finance Plus, Jim. And then we'll get back here and we'll talk about some stable coins. So first, okay. I'm going to share my screen, see if I can get this up correctly. And here we go. This is the dashboard. Well, let me get you to the dashboard. Here we go. It's going to take 2 seconds. But in Yahoo Finance Plus, it's a great complement to our existing platform. There's tons of free features that I keep discovering every day on our platform. But when you turn it on, get to the homepage here, you can see your portfolio performance. You can load this from your brokerage account. You can select stocks individually. And then you're going to see investment ideas. We give you fundamental and technical ideas every single day. And they tell you about different risk-reward strategies, how you can use technicals and some of the fundamental information by Argus Research to make investment decisions on different time frames too. And I'll give an example of some charts in a second here. So here we have research reports. These come from Argus. And if I click on Apple, for instance, oh, that was a ticker click. But if I click on the box for Apple, there we go. I'm going to pull up the research report. And these are fairly comprehensive, issued several times per year. We have different categories here, the analyst note, the business strategy and outlook, very similar to what you would find in a lot of other Wall Street research reports. Then right next to it, we have estimates of fair value for your portfolio. We have significant developments. So we track everything that a stock goes through, and you can actually chart this as well. On the charts, you can see which days, which events happen. Technical events, I'm going to go through some of these in a second. Company outlook, we have ESG scores, innovation scores, hiring scores, all that in a complete package here. And just want to highlight our insights because I think this is particularly valuable. I went through valuation, want to show diversification. This will tell you if you are overvalued in a different sector. For this one, which is kind of arbitrary, I have 67% weighting to communication services. And other than that, let's see here. I do want to get to investment ideas and show some of those. So when you pull up this screen, you're going to see fundamental reports and technical reports. So let's say, for instance, Illumina, this has been a stock that's been moving lately. And this will give you a summary of the Argus Research fundamental analysis of it. And if we were to click on this, we'll pull up our chart, trusty chart of Illumina. And we can see we have short-term technicals are bullish, midterm are bullish, long-term are negative here. We have support and resistance lines. All of those come with our premium product. And as well, you can even chart positions, technical events on the chart. So I'll give you an example. For instance, we have, let me pull up a stock here. Now, Powell ticker, haven't seen this one before. Powell Industries, let's view this in the chart. And we're going to see the technical pattern that it has identified. This is a continuing wedge. It's bearish, and we can see price indeed has fallen off since the pattern was identified. It will tell you the event description and all of that good stuff. Before we leave this particular section, I want to demonstrate one more thing. This is Community Insights. This is something powerful that I've been using more and more for my analysis of the markets. Anybody has access to Yahoo Finance trending tickers. It's a page that's updated and really shows you the retail zeitgeist, but this takes it to a whole new level over different time frames, shows you the most visited companies by our platform users, the biggest business news platform in the world. You can look at different sectors. These are some of the more popular names in energy, industrials, communication services. And all of this is proprietary information that we get from you, from our users. And here's our community conversations. We track portfolio changes anonymously, of course, as they are updated by users in our system. So all told, lots of features to unpack there. So I'm going to stop my sharing. I want to get to the results of poll two, and I'm going to share the results right now. My greatest concern about the investing landscape this year is inflation, monetary and fiscal policy. That got 59% of the 208 votes, by far the number one choice here. Geopolitical risk, political risk, health risk, all those were 6, 8, 9%. And then regulatory risk, the crypto crackdown, which we've been talking about, that comes in at 19%. Might as well get to the third poll and just set that up right now. I'm going to launch this. What was the first DeFi application? Was it Solana, Venmo, Fedwire, Ethereum, or Bitcoin? And we're going to leave that open for a little bit. And as promised, Jim, I want to get back to the talk about stablecoins, kind of relevant to the discussion we were having before about the Fed. And, China had one of these and we were talking on the phone. Fed says me too, but there's a little bit more to that. And in fact, Powell had some pointed comments about the much anticipated stablecoin report that is coming out, as he said, in a couple of weeks. So just want to get your big take on all of this as I share another one of your charts, which is market cap of the largest stablecoins.
Yeah. So two issues here. There's central bank digital currencies and there's stablecoins. But what is this? When you are in the DeFi, when you're in the crypto world, there is no, and you get off of a regulated exchange like a Kraken, a Gemini, a Coinbase, Binance US, or whatever. There is no fiat currency. There is no euros. There is no dollars. There's no yen. There's no pounds. So when you're trading in these currencies, these cryptocurrencies, the idea was, where do I go if I'm bearish? Where do I go in order to maintain my value? And that was the advent of what was known as stablecoins. And the whole idea behind a stablecoin is it's supposed to hold one for one with the dollar. Now, the most popular and oldest of the stablecoins, which was on the chart there, the green part, it was Tether. It was invented, I believe, in 2014, 2015 or so. And the way it worked was there was supposed to be a trust with assets in the trust that backs it one for one. And there's been some questions about the quality of the trust, the transparency around the trust. The other one is Circle USDC, which is part of the Circle Consortium, which Coinbase is part of as well too. But then when you start to wander away from the two big ones, you've seen a big growth area in what's known as algorithmic stable coins. These are stable coins that are not backed by US dollars in a traditional bank account. MakerDAO's DAI stablecoin was probably the first one. They do own other cryptos in the amount that they're supposed to own them in the amount. So if there's $1 billion of DAI outstanding, they own $1 billion of a basket of other cryptos, and they constantly adjust that. And then there's pure algorithmic stable coins as well too, where they just act like a central bank and they come in and they try and buy and sell those their own coin to try and hold the peg as well too. Now those algorithmic stable coins hold the most promise and have been the most failed, because, you know, as we've tried to create those, we being the entire crypto space, there's been one failure after another in those algorithmic stable coins, but it hasn't stopped and we continue to see them move forward. So that's the purpose. They're trading token is what they are. And if you are worried that the price of Ethereum and Bitcoin and some of these others are going to go down, what do I do with my money? Do I just exit the space altogether and go back to US dollars? Or do I hold a stable coin? Now there's central bank digital currencies. Their central banks are trying to create a digital version of their currency, a digital dollar for the Fed, that can be used similar to a stable coin. The problem with the central bank digital currencies is, other than the Bahamas sand dollar, they're really, the Bahamas central bank issued what's called the sand dollar as one of the earlier versions of it. Next month is the Olympics, and the Chinese are supposed to issue the digital yuan, is supposed to come into being around the Olympics as well too. But the rest of the central banks are either studying it or about to put out a paper or talking about it, but they haven't really gone anywhere with it. And the problem that they're running into with these central bank digital currencies is they don't know what they're trying to accomplish with them. Because one of the use cases for stable coins is payments. And there's an example I've used in the past that really comes to the hold. A Vietnam manufacturer uses an Indonesian supplier. And at the end of the month, they owe them, just to use an example, making it up, $50 million for the products that they bought, or the equivalent of $50 million US. So in the current system, the Vietnamese manufacturer would have to exchange $50 million US dollars equivalent of the Vietnamese dong into the Indonesian rupee. Then the banks would have to exchange it. And then they would have to move it in the account. There's all these middlemen in the way that take their pound of flesh. You have to report to the government so they get to report, so they get to tax it on both ends. Or if you've got a wallet and I've got a wallet, I'll send you $50 million worth of a stable coin and we're done in about 3 seconds. for virtually no cost. That's starting to happen in small amounts. And that's where central bank digital currencies were supposed to come in. But the problem is, and I'll use the Federal Reserve. If the Federal Reserve wants to put out a true digital currency that can compete with a stable coin in the US dollar, they risk cannibalizing the very financial system that they're supposed to regulate. They upend it. So no, they're not going to do that. They're going to put restrictions on it. They're going to have limitations here as well. And they might even have two versions of the central bank digital currency, an institutional one and a retail one. And at the end of the day, if that's what they wind up doing, they'll get no adoption because it won't accomplish anything that we don't already have. So what is it that they're trying to do? Interestingly, Jay Powell did something rare at the beginning of the summer to try and show that he was hip and cool. He put out a 5-minute YouTube video. See, the Fed can be kind of cool too. They can adopt 20-year-old
Liberty Street economics. Yeah.
Yeah. They can adopt 20-year-old technology like the rest of us. And he said, we are going to put out a position paper by the end of the summer explaining what we think about using a central bank digital currency. Well, I'm looking at my calendar right now. It's the end of January, and that paper is still not out. And I think part of the problem is they don't know what it is they're supposed to do. Are they competing with JP Morgan and Citibank and Wells and B of A to offer a different version of what they offer? Because if you were to go the full nine yards, here's a digital dollar, a central bank digital currency. Well, how do I own it? Well, the Fed will provide you an electronic wallet. And you can own your digital dollars in the Fed electronic wallet. Great. I don't want to keep my money at Citibank anymore. I'll keep my money with the Federal Reserve. Now Citibank has to compete with the Federal Reserve, who's also their regulator. Oh, no, we don't want to do that. We don't want to compete with them. So go ahead, put on a bunch of restrictions. And then what's the use of a central bank digital currency? So there's an existential crisis going on by these central banks. I don't think they know what they're supposed to do. But really, the reason that they're all talking about it is simple. China's doing one. China doesn't care about their banking system if the government competes with it. And since China has one, we've got to have one too, although we haven't quite thought it all the way through as to why we're putting one together and what it's supposed to accomplish. Witness that the Fed's paper is 6 or 7 months late, and they still haven't explained to us what it is they're trying to accomplish.
Well, we have just a few minutes left, and great explanation on all of that. Thank you for that. I want to get to one more question, and thanks to everybody. These are some great questions. What companies, coins do you see as leaders, good investments for 2022 and beyond, Jim?
So I'm going to answer this question generically. And what I mean by generically is I'm not going to pump any coins because I don't really do that as well. I am a big bull on the space in general. I think that the size of the crypto space over the next many years is going to continue to expand and expand. And of course, one of the ways it expands is a lot of the Bitcoins, increase in value. Although 2022 might be a challenging year, I think looking beyond that, it will. Next level. I think that as we look forward into 2022, last year's hot items, the alternative layer ones, I think are going to continue to struggle. They've had their day in the sun. They're hitting their maximum. Solana's got problems with gas fees going up and hitting limitations because they've gotten so popular and so many people use them. They're hitting the limitations that they've got. Arbitrum's got the same kind of issues going on as well too. I think they're going to struggle. DeFi 1.0, the balancers, the Aaves, the Uniswaps, they've been struggling for most of this year. Late in the year, we had DeFi 2.0 really take off. That would be the Olympus DAOs, the Tokamaks, the Rory Capitals as well. Protocol-owned liquidity is what they're trying to accomplish in DeFi 2.0. I think they're going to be an interesting place. But where I really think we might see a breakout in the space is in decentralized autonomous organizations or DAOs, and potentially in the Ethereum itself, if we get through the merge and we get through the changing. Ethereum is changing from proof of stake to proof of work, should happen in the first half of the year. I personally believe that this is a high wire act unlike anything we've seen. You've got a $500 trillion network that they're going to change the settlement of it from proof of work to proof of stake. This is a really challenging operation to do. I do believe they'll get it done, but I think once they've got it done and all of those technical challenges are behind them, there might be a bit of a relief rally that comes with, okay, now that we've moved on. And also, Ethereum could then, being proof of stake, uses about 1% the power that proof of work uses. For all those that are worried about energy consumption and ESG, it will become a natural place for it to go. But decentralized autonomous organizations, the Constitution DAO, when it tried to buy the Constitution, was probably the most popular example of that in the last 2 or 3 months. I think as we start to learn about this, Olympus is a DAO as well, too. As we start to learn about how DAOs work and how DAOs operate, they're mushrooming up. I think that that could be the next big hot area. I understand this is the nature of the space. It's like saying, I got to buy LLCs. How do I buy an LLC? It's a corporate structure is what we're talking about. But yes, these corporate structures do have a very bright outlook, especially when you consider that they might be an alternative to public ownership or public management of certain assets. I've joked around with the example that I could see the Central Park in New York City would be a perfect thing to basically give everybody in New York City a token that owns Central Park. And you know what? If you guys manage it well, your token will go up in value. And if you don't manage it well, your token will go down in value. So now we've incentivized everybody to manage this asset a lot better than it is. Look, it can't be managed much worse than it's being managed right now. But that's just one of many examples in the public space, especially.
Jim, we got to leave it there, but stick around 1 minute. I want to get to the results of our last poll. What was the first DeFi application? We got 11% and 8% saying Solana, then Venmo. Only 11 people, 6% said Fedwire. Ethereum got the most votes, 41%, and Bitcoin, the OG DeFi instrument. Correct answer, in my view, that got 34% of the view. Jim, before we let you go, can you stand up a second? You got some interesting things going on your shirt, and just want to show everybody who might be wondering what's on your shirt.
Yeah, so here's the future of finance right here on my shirt. So you can love kind it. Of get an idea of where we're going to go with all of this. Before we run, can I make a quick comment on the second poll?
We got 30 seconds to 1 minute.
Okay. Down at the bottom of the list in the second poll was health concerns. Mm-hmm. And at the top of the list was inflation concerns. And really what I'm most worried about, I'm going to go true TradFi for you here. What I'm most worried about here is as this Omicron variant mushrooms and we get millions of cases a day, it's not necessarily a health risk. But what it is that anybody who tests positive can't go to work for 10 days. Right. And we've got huge absenteeism. The production of the world, and that's really coming home in China in a big way, because China has a zero COVID policy. They lock everybody down and lock you in your house for weeks on end until COVID goes away. Production is going to wane, but our demand for stuff is not. Same demand, less production, higher prices, even more inflation. So what I'm most worried about as we go through in traditional is I'm at the top of that list with inflation, but the one that finished on the bottom underscores that idea. If we're not worried about health concerns, I'm not going to stop ordering Amazon boxes. I'm not going to stop ordering stuff that I want.
I hear you completely.
They're going to have a harder time fulfilling that because look what happened to United Airlines at Newark Airport a couple of days ago. 1/3 of their staff called in sick because they tested positive for Omicron.
It's 20 degrees outside.
All over the place.
It's 20 degrees outside. My heater's broken. I can't get it fixed. So I know I'm with you. Jim Bianco, really appreciated your insights. We got to go here. But thank you, everybody else, for your intelligent questions, for participating in the polls. We really enjoyed having everybody here. We're going to do it again in 1 month.